On Saturday, February 3rd, if you were in Lawrence or had friends in Lawrence, your social media feeds most likely filled with alerts about folks marching down Mass Street with flags. American flags, Confederate flags, even the Thin Blue Line flag, flown by white supremacists in Charlottesville last year. The Defend the Flag rally was mostly peaceful, although a video that made the rounds online captures one moment that got kind of ugly, and the whole incident has Lawrence in a state of shock. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and today we're asking Lawrence, what did that moment mean to you? 816-235-2888 is the number to call. That's 816-235-2888. I want to talk to Darren Kennedy. We're going to be hearing shortly from KCUR's national correspondent and senior editor Frank Morris about what actually happened that day. But first, let's chat quickly with Darren Kennedy. He's an English professor. And Darren, what has your experience of this whole thing been like?
Well, I think that, I mean, it's interesting because a lot of the discussions I have had and just my personal feelings push back on the idea of a largely peaceful protest because of the violent nature of the symbology used to promote it, right? So a lot of the discussion and the fears and the concerns really revolve around the use of the Confederate flag and the intimidation that was experienced by people in terms of racist epithets and anti-gay things that were heard and shouted during this demonstration, and the symbology of white nationalism. And you had mentioned earlier about thinking about kind of Lawrence's identity, and I think that that's actually an important thing that I, as someone who's Black and particularly both people that I've talked to that are, who are POCs, people of color, and identify as members of the queer community, the concern really does strike to the heart of pulling this mask off of Lawrence as a place where XYZ thing does not happen. And I think that there has been, frankly, a lot of gaslighting around the event in terms of the people talking about it as if no one has anything to be concerned about.
Can you explain that a little when you talk about gaslighting? Just the sense that are you getting the sense that people are interpreting any reaction as an overreaction?
Oh, certainly. I think, and the Midwest being what it is, I think that that gaslighting takes a number of forms. Some of it is very specific silence from what I think is a broader or a non-POC, non-LGBT Lawrence community discussion around it has not been as vibrant as I think some of us would have thought based on some of the demonstrations around the Women's March and resistance. Let's see some receivables, essentially.
Yeah, like you want to see more of essentially the white, straight community standing up with you?
Standing up and engaging in a way that says, we realize that, one, this is not some problem that exists in a history book or in somewhere else, but that there is work to do on the ground here.
You know, I'm curious about exactly how you experienced that day, February 3rd, yourself.
Mm-hmm. So it was interesting. I will say I was in my apartment doing work. And as you pointed out, seeing some reports from on the ground, for lack of a better term, from downtown. So I live probably, I can drive, well, actually I can run to downtown within 10 minutes if I'm out, and seeing, I'm seeing trucks, comes one post, another post, another message sent directly to me and some of my friends. I'm seeing a surfeit of Confederate flags, and then further reports of hearing, again, some epithets.
When you say you were getting messages and things like that. I mean, were these like warnings to you to be careful? Were these?
Yes. So, sorry, didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
No, no, I'm curious a little bit more about the content of the messages you were getting.
Mm-hmm. The messages were, one, establishing what it was that people were seeing, right? So I got pictures of Confederate flags and blue line, as you said, and marchers. And then also messages that did say, all of my black and brown friends, please be wary, be careful. If you don't need to come downtown right now, don't. And then also this engaged another discussion that I think is important that was also happening that I think continues to complicate this, which is what is sort of a various communities' responses, right? Because I also have a friend who is a black woman who I respect very highly, who was very actually incensed about the directive to not come down, because her feeling is when you cede that space, when you close up in your apartment or you say, I'm not going to confront, then you are giving room, space, and legitimacy to you are creating a message that says we shouldn't engage.
I have to jump in and say we're going to be cutting to President Trump very shortly.
Gotcha.
Who's giving a speech from the White House, and NPR is going to be carrying that. It will be soon that we're going to be cutting. I can't say exactly what moment, but we'll be getting back to this discussion. I want to say that before any of this happens. We'll be getting back to this discussion, and we'll be bringing in Frank Morris, who was there that day, who's done some reporting on this, and who can maybe fill in some of our gaps in information. But hearing what you're saying, though, you know, do you think that getting your information through social media might have shaped your experience of this in a particular way?
Oh, certainly. I don't think that there's a way that it couldn't have, right? I think it, on the one hand, it allowed me to get more, for lack of a better term, more sources, i.e. different people who could message and say, well, I'm at such and such location and I'm sending this, and I'm at another location 3 or 4 blocks away and I'm seeing this. But at the same time, I'm working to figure, there's no way of immediately aggregating all of these things to find out what all the framework is. And so that was part of it. But I have to say as well that the social media, but also texts and personal phone calls, the grapevine is something that the grapevine of knowing how to reach out, particularly to black and brown communities when there is a concern about one's safety, predates social media, right? And so I think that that for me reminded me very much of things that phone calls that my parents received when I was a child growing up about, I'm hearing this thing is happening, be careful on such and such date. It's just that there's more immediacy to it, at least in my experience on that day.
So, yeah, you have some history that it was also tapping into. You know, we're going to be talking with people who live in Lawrence, who have strong ties to Lawrence. We'd love to hear from you at 816-235-2888 about how you experienced those events on February 3rd, the Defend the Flag rally and the response to it, whether it touched a nerve for you that was really personal on some level or even historic. We're going to be hearing shortly from a caller who is concerned about disrespect of the flag. That's an issue that came up as part of this event. And hopefully from a lot of other people. Frank Morris, national correspondent here and senior editor, you were in Lawrence that day, and it has been hard to figure out exactly what happened, as in who did what and why.
Well, there was some, there was some talk about, you know, Russians actually, or, you know, Russian bots triggering this whole thing. I think that was pretty well tracked down. The actual drag the flag thing that kind of set off the rednecks was a legitimate event that was going to happen, pulled back and tied to a specific person.
So that was a real event, because you know there was talk about whether
that was a planned event. There was a similar event, I think, the weekend before.
Okay, because yeah, the conversation around this has been that the people who came out to defend the flag were responding to a drag the flag rally, and there was some question about whether that had ever existed.
It did exist, and you know, so that wasn't you know, that wasn't made up. I mean, I think there's still some questions about. There's still a lot of room for disinformation to get into social media streams, and that happens all the time. It happened at MU. We learned a lot of people learned recently, and the MU protests were fueled in part by Russian bots. So,
which is nuts.
Which is nuts. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. and retweeted by people who were there on the ground. You know, you had these stories coming out of Russia about, you know, the police marching with the KKK across campus and beating people up. It coupled with a picture of a person who'd been beat up, and that was retweeted not only by bots but by thousands of people, including I think the president of the you know of the campus there. So I mean, stuff like this it does get out of hand on social media. So I was there. I kind of saddled up and got out there. I was thinking that this was a white nationalist event, maybe tied to Saeed Jamal, who's the news of him had just broken, and there was a big letter writing campaign to help him, the guy from originally from Bangladesh being deported, and so that's what I thought was happening.
That there was a reaction to that.
That there was, you know, and that it was a reaction, that it was an organized white nationalist reaction. That I was also seeing stuff on Facebook saying, you know, 40 to 60 pickup trucks with rebel flags, stay away. And, you know, when I got there, it wasn't really like that. There were lots and lots, there were, you know, I don't know, maybe 100, 150 people about equal measure, you know, defend the flag folks and a bunch of other, you know, social justice Lawrence people there, all kind of intermingling, you know, with their flags and sort of taunting each other and calling each other names. There are people driving up and down the street with flags, you know, some, you know, kind of going both ways. There's also a lot of just regular.
People have been saying peaceful, but name calling is sort of this gray area between maybe.
You know, there were threats. I mean, there were, you know, there was it was physical. You know, there was physical tension in the air. Some of the defend the flag people were armed, I'm told. I didn't see any weapons, but so it wasn't like they were there in camo with ARs, you know, as you saw here on Mill Creek Park a number of months ago. So, you know, I mean, it wasn't friendly, but it was actually, there was some dialogue happening there. And I think get to that tape in a little
bit. Yeah, we're going to listen to some of your conversations with people.
Yeah. And you know, I was, when I got there, honestly, when I saw what was happening, my response was like, well, this isn't really what I was thinking it was going to be. You know, this looks to me, and I think, you know, you could trace the roots of this. There are different organizations that were involved in kind of coalescing the drag the flag thing. Some of them are pretty organized, like apparently men's rights guys you know, pretty much white nationalist activists in Ozaki. Some of them, rest of them, were just regular, like, country folks who were upset about the flag being desecrated.
So there was not necessarily a unified group of people all there for the same reason.
Right. And you know, and there were some Confederate flags, but not a ton of them. There were mainly a bunch of American flags. And so, you know, and what I saw was, you know, I got there kind of late coming from Kansas City and, you know, getting notified. I was planning to go to Lawrence anyway that day, but I had to, you know, come in from KC. And, you know, there were like sort of these different sort of social justice groups had mobilized and they were out with signs and flags kind of mingling basically with the defend the flag people, with police, and they're right, you know, half a block from the police station with police walking around.
Okay, I'm going to play a little bit of your conversations with people. You talk to this guy, and I should say, if it cuts to the president in the middle of this, we'll listen to the whole thing again later. But you talk to this guy who seemed to object to what he considers extremism on both sides.
Well, this is Scooter, one of the organizers of the defend the flag part.
Okay, cool. Yeah, let's hear a little of that conversation. There's a brief outburst from another protester in the middle of this, but yeah, let's listen.
We're just out here to support our country's flag and defend our country.
What is your group?
Our group is actually just an event we created on Facebook called Defend Our Flag. That's all the group is. It was just started by me and a couple of my friends who saw this other person's post, and you know, we thought that's something that we don't want in our country, and we want to show them how Americans behave.
So how do you think it's gone? How do you think this has been successful?
You know, it started out really well. We've had a few extremists on both sides come out and really try to get some things going. But for the most part, it's been a pretty peaceful day. It really has.
I'm here telling everybody that we are one under the same nation and the same regulations. And I just want everybody to know that everybody is equal and we need to create more positivity in this earth. No matter what you come here for, we are one. It doesn't matter today.
Like, there's been any any understanding, any mutual understanding?
On an individual level, I feel that there has been. Like I said, a lot of the extremism on both sides has kind of tainted the message from both sides. I mean, you've got, you know, on the right side or the side, you know, the conservative side, you have what they call the alt-right, you know, the Nazis that are out here. You know, we hate them just as much as we hate anyone who drags our flag. You know, the Nazi flag, that was a symbol of oppression to America. And then on the other side, you know, Antifa, you know, they're out here to create violence and whatnot, and that's not what we're looking for.
We are going to get back now to our conversation about Lawrence and what happened earlier this month with a Defend the Flag rally that was a response to a canceled event, a Drag the Flag rally, a lot of tensions in Lawrence around all of those incidents. Right as we went to the president's speech, we were hearing a clip from some people who are national correspondent and senior editor Frank Morris met that day. And Frank, we heard two voices in that. We actually heard from a gentleman who helped plan the event, who really seemed opposed to what he considered extremism on both sides. We also heard a more emotional outburst, I would say, mm-hmm. from another protester. Does that capture maybe some of the differences in who's there, why they're there, the tone?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, I'd say that, you know, there was definitely, you know, that person who kind of interjected themselves into the conversation. You know, she wasn't any more emotional than a lot of other people there, you know, and you know, and yeah, people, you know, typically people who come out to something like this, they've got something to say. And if you've got a microphone, you know, they're going to talk to you. And it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be, you know, if you're already having a conversation with somebody else, you don't necessarily want to engage them, you know. But, you know, I feel like that. And, you know, I mean, that doesn't really get to the extremes. I mean, there were definitely people saying really hateful things and having heated conversations there.
What were some of the themes of those heated conversations?
Well, you know, it's a lot of name calling, you know, and a lot
name calling more than themes.
I mean, I guess that was a theme. You know, it's like you are a, you know, evil person. And you need to get out of here, you know, and that you know, that's kind of that there was a lot of that kind of coming from both sides. And then, you know,
like
there
who
also
has a right to be here in Lawrence.
Basically. Yeah. And I'd say there's also quite a bit of conversation just among people from, you know, more like their own side that was more just kind of collegial, you know, I'm ready to kick some ass kind of talk. You know what I mean? And
people getting sort of fired up.
Yeah, people were fired up, and you know, and there were people driving by, and you know, and apparently there was some mistaken identity where there was a, you know, one, there's this John Brown Gun Club in Lawrence. It's a left wing militia, and you know, people mistook them for right wing militia, and you know, I mean, so there, you know, there was you know, but a lot of interaction.
Well, so Darren Kennedy, we were speaking with you earlier, and just to remind our listeners, you're a professor of English at KU, and you've identified yourself as an African American man. And I'm curious, from your standpoint, was it surprising to you to hear the guy Frank Met talking about that being opposed to Nazis, being opposed to the alt-right, being opposed to white supremacists?
Surprising? No. I mean, I think that I think context is really important, right? And to take a historical look at this, right? Because if we think back to, and obviously, the specter of Charlottesville hangs over this event, right? And while it clearly did not escalate to the level of Charlottesville, I don't think we should. I think it's dangerous to ever discuss something like this in a vacuum. And so, if we think back to the rhetoric that came out of Charlottesville, there was a lot of, as we listened to the president's previous speech, the famous quotation of bad people, there are good people on both sides, both sides. So the idea that someone would say, I'm against extremism on either side, doesn't surprise me in the least, because I've heard that before. To me personally, that does not make me feel less concerned about what I do know was a linking of patriotism with the symbology of white nationalism. And that, again, those two things are connected in this event, sure. But his statement that, we don't like extremism either way, that does not make me feel better about the linking of the Confederate flag and the American flag. Because if we were talking about defend the flag, by all means, but as a marginalized person, as a black person who looks upon this event, my first question is, well, which flag are we talking about?
You know, so there is a sense that I am getting that, and that I think a lot of people are getting, that there's like a town versus surrounding area kind of thing, like this supposedly liberal bubble of Lawrence versus everyone else. Darren, is that part of something you're feeling right now?
I mean, I think having been a Kansan all my life, except for let's say in two jaunts, having grown up here, I think that has always been part of Lawrence's identity, is as the sort of left-leaning, one of the major left-leaning communities in a right-leaning state. I think what that means in our very polarized current political climate has meant means new things than it has, personally, than it has ever meant before.
Explain that a little.
I think that Lawrenceans and many of the black and brown people that live in Lawrence are part of a conversation in which Lawrence is tagged and framed as this liberal oasis. And that those same vulnerable identities we find ourselves caught between a little bit of a rock and a hard place, right? Which is that there is a reality that Lawrence is left-leaning in a right-leaning state. And so it does create, it is something of a refuge. But at the same time, just as Lawrence is also a Midwestern town, and the Midwest struggles to discuss race, struggles to discuss institutionalized racism, struggles to discuss how that institutionalized racism shows up in everyday life, how we as marginalized people see an event like that and are intimidated. Lawrence, like many other communities, struggles to really engage that discussion and understand why that would be so intimidating.
Well, we are,
and why that is violence. And so that's what I think is kind of complicated about this idea of Lawrence's liberal bubble, and understanding, yes, it is a target in that respect, but also there are complications.
Well, and it seems like it also complicates the idea of what is a peaceful protest and what is not, just if different people experience words either as peaceful or as violent. We're going to invite Lawrence to chime in on this at 816-235-2888. We've got a couple of callers who I do want to get to pretty soon. But to get more to this point about Lawrence and the surrounding area, Frank, you know, you met someone who had something to say about that. He insisted that this wasn't just people from the surrounding area, that there were people from Lawrence who were participating in the Defend the Flag rally. And he also had this to say about how he characterized kind of the tensions and who was there and why. Let's give that a listen.
LGBT groups and everybody said that it was racist bigots that came out, so they all showed up out here. I work with a bunch of veterans, so that's why I came out to hold the flags for all the veterans that we've lost, probably 20 or 30 that I've known.
You know, Frank, what's your sense of this whole issue of, like, these different identities and people's ideas about who's there and why? I mean, just that characterization was interesting to me.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, I think it's kind of, you know, it's problematic when you start describing people's motivations, you know, and people, I think, you know, in that park that Saturday afternoon, I think there were people there representing a lot of different points of view. So, you know, I mean, and honestly, in the time that we are now, where you have foreign governments trying to exacerbate tensions between, you know, like actively trying, and again, I don't think we really know yet if that happened in Lawrence. But again, it happened in MU. It happens with, you know, people, you know, kind of inflaming right wing, inflaming left wing. I think it's really good to kind of try to have a conversation with folks across the political spectrum. And, you know, there are those conversations to be had. But, you know, of course, they end when you start calling them names.
You know, when I read the comments on a Lawrence Journal World article, you know, Darren, you've mentioned this idea of we can't see these things in a vacuum. We have to use some historical context. And you referenced Charlottesville, but going back a lot further than that, you know, when I read the comments on a Lawrence Journal World article, a lot of those comments use language that to me felt really reminiscent of the language Lawrence often uses to describe Quantrill's raid. This idea of people
of
from
course.
Out of town
yeah.
coming in, attacking our values, attacking us, trying to intimidate us, this progressive outpost. That is still really how Lawrence sees itself today, and it's so tied to that moment. And I wonder if both mm-hmm. I want both of you, Frank mm-hmm. and Darren, to talk to me about this. I mean, Darren, you go first.
I mean, yes, there's the mythology of Quantrill's raid looms large, right? I don't see that changing anytime soon. What is interesting, I find, is that that is also very closely tied to the larger Kansas identity as the quote free state, right? That as times and mores have changed and post the Civil War, we kind of look upon slavery as a bad thing.
I would say so.
However, there seems to be still an idea, a problem that we have, not just in Lawrence, but across the nation, of using too broad a brush and trying to create monoliths where monoliths do not exist. And so there is an idea that because of this heritage that goes all the way back to Quantrill's raid and the free soil of Lawrence, that there are not Lawrencians here who would espouse white nationalist or just extremist and divisive beliefs. And that just simply that's not the case.
You know, Frank, I want you to jump in here.
Well, I mean, I think there, you know, I have friends who, you know, live in Lawrence and I think you're right. You have people coming in who are, you know, flying a Confederate battle flag, you know, that, you know, I think there's a Lawrence identity that says, you know, this is a town that you know, got creamed and fought back and, you know, was a stronghold for progressive beliefs of the time, you know, militantly, you know. And so I think that that's part of the Lawrence identity. You know, and now, yeah, you do have these, you always have a real, you know, panoply of different groups involved in Lawrence, you know, maybe working together, maybe not. So, you know, I think you're right. The Quantrill's raid thing, it does strike a nerve with some people in Lawrence.
We're going to get right back to this conversation about the Defend the Flag rally that happened a couple weeks ago in Lawrence and the nerve that it's touched for the people of Lawrence regarding Lawrence identity and maybe even vulnerability. 816-235-2888. We'll get right to those calls when we return. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard, and we're talking about a Defend the Flag rally that happened in Lawrence earlier this month. It's gotten people really worked up on all sides of the political spectrum about a variety of issues, including which is the identity of Lawrence and the identity of Lawrence within Kansas, this state that has this free state history, but also a lot of different ideas around it in terms of, you know, where it stands politically today. 816-235-2888 is the number to call if you want to join this conversation with KCUR's Frank Morris and KU's Darren Kennedy. He's an English professor. And we're going to turn now to Kurt. Kurt is with us from Olathe. Hi, Kurt.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you want to share?
Well, I've listened patiently for quite a little while to the perspective that's being offered by your two guests. I heard one of them say that the people that were defending the flag were, quote, rednecks, and characterizing patriots in a negative slant. I wasn't at the rally because I own a business and work 10-hour days. I didn't have the time to go protest or be a part of it, but got some pretty strong feelings in that regard. these young men that minimize our flag probably haven't had one handed to them like my mother did when we lost our brother, when we lost my brother in Vietnam. There's a lot of patriotism still alive and well in this country, a lot of belief in God and Christianity, you know, there is no hatred in my heart for anyone that is different than me. But I won't be forced to agree with them because their belief system is different than mine.
Well, thank you, Kurt.
A lot of people have fought and died so that these two young men can speak their mind. And I think that is what most of the people that were at the Defend the Flag rally were there for.
You know, I want to turn back to our guests. First of all, I mean, Kurt is objecting to some terminology, the term redneck. And
well, I mean, I think that was me who said that. And I have, you know, I guess, you know, I'm from a rural background, and I don't think of redneck as a derogatory term. You know, I think of it as a sort of, to me, it's a neutral term for country folks. There are a lot of country folks there. And that's what I meant by redneck.
And so this, Darren, the talking about the flag is something that, mm-hmm. that you've mentioned before. And I wonder mm-hmm. if you want to respond to that. I mean, just the idea, obviously our caller feels really personally, understandably mm-hmm. so, about the flag. Do you mm-hmm. think that that might be something that makes it hard to tease out what your message is and is not?
Right. Sure. I mean, I want to be clear about where the intimidation that I and members of my community are coming from. The connection of the American flag to being about sacrifice cuts across a number of cultural communities. That is not what I'm concerned about and taking issue with. And, you know, I'll gingerly put out there, I think that this is part of a larger conversation that also has to do with, you know, how we responded and talk about the NFL protests. And our concern, I'll speak for myself. My concern, right, is this connection of American patriotism with the meaning and the symbology of the Confederate flag and what that means, and the white nationalist symbology that was also present in Lawrence and that has echoes, right? Like, no matter how limited, right, there are these ghosts, these specters of connections that we saw in Lawrence that link us back to Charlottesville and even further into other things. That I'm encouraging people who agree with Kurt to say, to understand that my concerns and the fears and intimidations that I experienced are not fighting the sacrifice that you or your family members have given. It is really trying to say there are multiple truths that exist here. And while that truth is very real for you, this other truth of this very dangerous linking to an ideology that is based in the bondage of my ancestors is a problem.
And it sounds like a big part of your reaction is the Confederate flag, not the American flag.
Right. And to be clear, again, it is the linking of the two, because I think that that's also something here that is related to Lawrence's identity, right, and Charlottesville's identity, right? This idea that if you are the seat of intellectualism in your larger region, KU being president in Lawrence, the University of Virginia being the residing in Charlottesville, that somehow there is an antithetical or antipathetic relationship between a college town's identity and patriotism. I find that that's very concerning to me in our current climate.
Let's talk to Chad in Lawrence. Hi, Chad.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How about you?
Doing fine, thanks.
What do you want to share? What was your experience of this rally, the reaction to it, and what kind of a nerve did it touch for you as someone calling from a 785 number?
Well, and I live just a few blocks away, so I walked down there, and I walked into basically a group of men that I would consider to be a little bit more of the sort of Nazi-leaning men.
What told you that?
Well, their Confederate flags were kind of a sign. And I walk into this group of men. I was wearing a set of brass knuckles I will punch a Nazi if it comes to it. And they all, several of them had guns on their hips, and they were yelling to the police that I had brass knuckles. So that was interesting. I literally took brass knuckles to a gunfight is what I felt like. And what I saw, I did not see any, you know, I did not run into any of the folks that were maybe more of a defend the flag type. What I saw were people that were more like, I hate people from Lawrence.
So you felt like the identity of Lawrence was making Lawrence a target and was under siege of some kind?
I don't know about under siege, but I do think it's always made it a target.
You know, does this raise questions for you? Do you think differently about your community after February 3rd, or was
no,
it just an
no,
incident?
I don't. That's not. Those people aren't part of my community. They showed up. They showed up in my town, and then they left. With their yelling at people as they went, you know, drove down the street. That was my experience of. And I stood shoulder to shoulder with a friend who, you know, almost got into a fight with one of these guys. It was a person he was with was wearing an American flag as a cape.
Which, yeah.
And he said, "Hey," he said, "you're here to defend the flag, but you're wearing it like a cape." you know, and it sparred quite a very heated conversation.
Well, there's a guy wearing a pair of American flag underwear. Yeah, to honor the flag at that thing. So.
Frank, which is actually illegal.
I'd like you to join in here, and because we're hearing also, part of what I'm hearing is, you know, we've got a Confederate flag signifying that someone is a Nazi. We have so much terminology, many different labels that we're all putting on each other.
Right.
And that's part of what's coming out here in terms of, I still feel a little bit confused about who's doing what. I mean, is there anything that you feel like you need to clarify just about the facts of this day?
Well, I mean, you know, people who are in a political group, it's very important to get their ideology right, and they want to be called what they're called. But if you're part of an opposing political group, they're just part of some big group that you oppose, you know. And so, you know, people who are Nazis, they are real Nazis, and you can tell they're Nazis, you know. And there are white supremacists and there are white nationalists, and it may seem like fine points to people who are, you know, on the left, but then again, all the sort of gender identity, you know, groups on the left seem like one big group to people on the right. So, you know, I think that, you know, in an era where we are really under attack, and there are forces both within the country and outside the country that really want to stir things up to no particular end, just to see things, you know, come apart. You really have to, I think it's time to be a little bit extra muscular in trying to figure out really what people are and not calling them something that they're not, you know, in terms of their political identities.
We have a tweet from someone named Anne who and I'm sharing this because we also have some calls about this. A lot of people feeling this. Respect to the veteran caller, but patriots should stand up against the Confederate flag. Not one of the flag defenders said, hey, put that away. That's not what this is about. They tolerated it. Interesting comment. And yeah, a lot of people feeling like, upset about the linking of patriotism and
you know, a flag that was fighting against the United States.
Indeed.
Darren, jump in, because I can feel you on the other. You're with us remotely from Lawrence, and I can feel you having something to say.
Well, part of it that I want to address is again, and I'm sorry to be a little bit of a broken record, I think there is an important point in here about not looking at either, looking at this protest or any protest really as something that's monolithic, particularly in a number of years now, which I can say since 2014, in which activism has resurged, and grassroots street protest has appeared in ways that perhaps had been somewhat dormant, not truly dormant, but had looked differently in previous years.
Yes, yeah, smaller, quieter, maybe.
Right. And so while I completely hear that point and Frank's point about needing to engage dialogue, I want to make sure that we also leave space to not slip into absolute relativism while we're going there, right? That we're not just saying, well, these are all just equal, diverse ideas, and so we make a space for them all. We've got to adjudicate and critique while we're there.
And Frank, you had one other thing you wanted to address that we've run a little bit out of time for, but just so much of this did happen on social media, and a few words about that.
Well, again, obviously this does get spun up on social media. Social media is very handy for people who want to inflame passions because they've got a sort of a captive audience. I just think that, you know, the way people use social media has got to become more sophisticated, because we've proven ourselves over and over again on both sides of the spectrum as being very vulnerable to having, you know, passions whipped up
manipulation.
Manipulated. And for not for anyone's, not for the good of either side, but against the whole.
So, yeah, big topic. Frank Morris is KCUR's senior editor and national correspondent. Darren Kennedy joined us from KU's English department. Keep sharing your thoughts about what happened in Lawrence. We're at KCUR CST. You can listen back to all of this at kcur.org/centralstandard. Stick around for Up to Date.